May it please the court, Justice Jacobs, Justice Holland, Justice Ridgely, I'm Kevin Healy here on behalf of Gloria Glover, the appellant. I'd also like to acknowledge my opposing counsel, Ms. Beam, and Mr. Castorino. This matter arises out of an automobile accident back on August 19, 2008. And in your appendix at page 137 are some photos that were in evidence at trial, and one of them is this, which is the vehicle that Ms. Glover was a passenger in. And immediately following the accident, she felt immediate pain in her neck, her left shoulder, and down her left arm. Those are symptoms that she had from the very beginning and symptoms for which she commenced treatment right after the accident. That ultimately led to surgery on her left shoulder on June 18, 2009. That subsequently led to surgery on her neck on September 14, 2010, which required the insertion of a metal plate and six screws. And she incurred over $33,000 in medical bills beyond the $100,000 in PIP coverage that she had. There was no evidence of any prior medical history of any injury or complaints or treatment of the neck or the shoulder prior to the August 19, 2008 accident.
Counsel, I gather that what you're asking us to do is reverse and remand either for editor or a new trial?
We are, Your Honor.
And what is the standard by which we're to review this decision?
The standard is abuse of discretion. It's here because we moved for a new trial and or editor, and that was denied by the lower court.
Okay. Well, if it is abuse of discretion, then doesn't that imply that there may be a range of reasonable outcomes that the jury could have arrived at and could have been upheld by the trial court without any error, that is, without any reversible error?
Your Honor, I believe on the evidence before the jury, the great weight of the evidence.
No, I'm just talking about as a general matter, not in this case.
Your Honor, I don't believe the jury could have reached a conclusion.
Mr. Healy. Is there only one correct result and a million and anything else, all of the infinitesimal possibilities other than that one result is wrong? Or is there a range of outcomes that could be reasonable under an abuse of discretion analysis?
Well, there may be a range of outcomes in terms of the amount of damages awarded that could be reasonable. I agree with that. But in terms of when you have the jury awarding $38,000 when there was two surgeries and medical bills of $33,000.
Okay, well, you're saying that's unreasonable. The court found that it was because there were reasonable explanations for how the jury might have gotten there. Don't you have to show that the court is wrong other than just by comparing the numbers?
Exactly, Your Honor. And where the court was wrong is that based on the medical evidence, there was no evidence contradicting the fact that both surgeries and the medical bills were related to this accident. There was no prior medical history of any prior problems, no symptoms prior to this accident. And many of the cases that discuss these types of issues usually have a prior medical history involved, a prior or subsequent motor vehicle accident of some kind that the court has to consider and thus provide explanation for why the jury might have come in with a low award. I can't help but believe here that the jury bought into the argument proposed by the defendants below that the next surgery was not related to the accident. And they arrive at that because on cross-examination...
That was a disputed fact, was it not?
Your Honor, I don't think it was a disputed fact after all the evidence was in.
Was it disputed by the other side, Mr. Keeley?
Yes, Your Honor, it was disputed
by the
other side.
So the jury could have come out either way.
Not on that evidence, Your Honor, because they did not have any, the requirement is, and there was a jury instruction to this effect, to the extent the jury is going to find a fact based on medical expert testimony, that testimony must be based on a reasonable medical probability and not possibilities.
Well, your client's credibility is also in issue in this case, isn't it?
Your Honor, to the extent any client's credibility is always an issue in a case, but in this particular case, the facts of this case show that the objective medical evidence was all that these injuries are related to this accident.
I thought the record showed that the objective evidence of the neck injury didn't appear for quite a while after the accident. In fact, there were some earlier diagnostic tests that didn't show this, and then later tests did reveal the neck problem. Is that correct?
No, Your Honor. The neck injury was always there. What the reference, I think what you're referring to is when, at what point was a herniation detected in the neck area. The neck was treated from the very beginning of the accident.
I understand that, but I'm saying the objective evidence on a diagnostic test of a neck injury didn't appear for quite a while.
Your Honor, it's interesting. The CT scan that was done of the neck early on did not show a herniation in the areas that were ultimately operated on, but neither did the MRI, according to the MRI report done in June of 2010. It's Dr. Sugarman who, when reviewing the films personally, detected the herniations. Those herniations could have very easily been there in the CAT scan, but not detected by the radiologist or not reported by the radiologist.
Well, that's one inference. Isn't there another?
The other inference could have been the herniation could have occurred at some later point in time, or so that's an inference. But
well,
we're
just trying to understand the record.
Sure.
You know, to the best of our ability. And it appears that I'm correct. For whatever reason, if they were there, nobody saw them. And then when they first time they saw them, it was a substantial time after the accident. Is that correct?
Yes. The only time that a surgeon looked at the films was a substantial amount of time after the accident. And what Dr. Sugarman said is whether or not the herniation was present before or after, she was asymptomatic before. And it wasn't until this accident that she was symptomatic, and those symptoms were very consistent throughout
What was the relevance of the part of the record that talks about the fact that it could be attributable to some degenerative condition? That was an alternative that was discussed at trial, wasn't it?
It was, Your Honor. It was Dr. Sugarman's opinion within a reasonable degree of medical probability that it was not. It's his opinion that was expressed that said it is related to the accident and that his surgery was related to the accident. The fact that there was a general discussion on cross-examination about principles that apply to any case, which is a herniation can occur as a result of degeneration and not necessarily as a result of trauma. Dr. Sugarman acknowledged that. He didn't say that's what specifically happened in this case. That was not his opinion in this case. And there is precedent that clearly shows where there's no contradicting medical opinion that that should be accepted by the jury.
Did the defense challenge Dr. Sugarman's opinion with their own expert evidence?
They did not, Your Honor.
They did it through cross?
They just did it through cross-examination. The expert that they called upon that was an announced expert before the jury pool, Dr. Rushton, an orthopedic surgeon from Philly, was ultimately not called, and for tactical reasons, because his opinion certainly would not have helped them, so they relied on the cross.
So the answer is no, they relied on cross.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, one other question. For any appellate court to find that a trial judge in denying a motion of this kind abused his or her discretion is, you know, a fairly unusual thing for an appellate court to do. And when that is done, there is generally a principled reason for it. What would be the principal reason in this case for this court to find that, that there was an abuse of discretion?
Two things, Your Honor. The medical evidence was uncontradicted that the surgeries and the medical expenses were related to this accident. And two, based on that, that $38,000 is not an appropriate award. It's out of proportion to what the injuries were and should shock the conscience of the court and meet that standard for additor.
Now, did somebody testify that the medical bills were causally related?
Yes, Your Honor. All of the doctors said that the only treatment provided to her was in relationship to these surgeries and the treatment by Dr. Zarifos, the osteopathic doctor. They all testified that their treatment and the injuries were directly related to the accident. And the only bills presented to the jury were the bills not covered by the PIP coverage, which is auto coverage for automobile-related injuries.
The second element or part of your characterize as the principled argument, you know, that we should accept is that the bottom line, that is only $4,000 were awarded for pain and suffering. Correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
I guess that's not a principle. I mean, the principle, if there is one, is that is your comment that there was that the evidence was not contradicted. And I guess to the extent that there was no controverting medical expert evidence, that's right. But it was contradicted in the sense of what came out on cross from that particular physician. Isn't that true?
Your Honor, not in the legal sense, it's not. It's not sufficiently contradicted because it did not meet the standard of reasonable medical probability. As the Christiana School District versus Rowland case held, it's a very similar case factually as far as the issues that were presented. The doctor testified that because the person was, there was no symptoms before the accident, that the surgeon testified it's his belief that it's related to this incident. And also the existence of pre-existing degenerative disease was not a contradictory fact because, again, there was no symptoms before the accident. So all of us walk around with degenerative conditions of one kind or another. The question is, are they symptomatic?
Your argument suggests that the court should have, in effect, instructed the jury or directed a verdict on the issue of causation. Is that correct?
Could have been done, Your Honor.
Was there a request at the trial level to do that?
There was not, Your Honor.
Mr. Healy, we've almost used up your opening, but tell the court, if you would, your theory of negligence with regard to Van Gilder. And was it the same as the allegations in the complaint?
The theories of negligence were, Your Honor, and that's based. Well, yes, they were not different than the theory of negligence was that my client and her driver could have been incorrect in thinking that they had a green arrow as opposed to a solid green light. They're making a left-hand turn. There was a vehicle next to them that when there was some sign of green, that vehicle pulled straight while they made a left.
Well, the purpose of my question is to focus on this issue of using the allegations in the complaint for impeachment. And there are a lot of cases from other jurisdictions, some of which nobody cited, but they seem in other jurisdictions to be concerned, whether you're pleading in the alternative or you're making an allegation that you later can't prove and you've abandoned it. I just want to make certain that in this case, you were alleging for the jury exactly what was in the complaint. The fact that your client disavowed those theories is something you had to contend with, but the fact is you were saying he didn't exercise due care and he didn't do the other things. That was still what you wanted the jury to find. Is that correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
All right. It's just that your client didn't support the allegations in her own complaint.
Correct, and it was known that she never would because her honest recollection was that the light was a green arrow, and It became quite a sticky issue in the court and the trial below, just because this idea that my client could be testifying to one fact, but on the other hand, alleging that there's potential negligence on the part of the driver, which seems inconsistent with her testimony. But a passenger is placed in that position.
Yeah, I'm not being critical in the least. I'm just trying to understand the record.
Sure.
You have about 4.5 minutes. Do you want to save that?
I will, Your Honor. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Kaiser.
Please, the court. I represent one of the defendants, Jeffrey Swing, and so as not to be repetitive, I shall discuss the medical bills and the neck injury, and Mrs. Beam, who represents the co-defendant, will discuss credibility and the shoulder injury, if that's okay with the court. We intend to take 10 minutes, if that's acceptable. It was always our position that the neck surgery was not caused by the accident, but was caused by degenerative disc disease, either in total or in part. Yet, for tactical reasons, plaintiff's attorney did not ask any of the doctors about any of their medical bills. And the jury didn't know what bills were for what, because there was no breakdown. We agreed to stipulate to those bills, but we did not agree that they were related to the accident. And the stipulation that the jury got specifically said that. Said the parties agreed that $33,700 were incurred, but whether they were related to the accident is up to you for the jury to decide. And from what we can tell, the jury decided that all of those bills were not related. And I think that's clear from the size of the verdict.
So did they ever actually see bills, or they just got a number?
Got a number. There were no bills that were presented.
And how could the jury sort through that? You know, if your theory was the neck injury didn't apply, and what we're hearing on appeal is the jury agreed, how did the jury know that 25,000 out of the 33 were for the neck? It was just up to them?
Your Honor, they didn't know. I mean, it wasn't our case. This was the plaintiff's case, and it was apparently the plaintiff's tactical reason to do that. By doing that, he deprived us.
I'm not suggesting.
No, he deprived us of our cross-examination.
I'm trying to understand how the jury concluded that some portion of the 33 were connected to the neck and rejected them.
We don't know.
Well, was there did the plaintiff's attorney blackboard any numbers?
$33,700.
Okay.
Yes.
So, I mean, this was
the jury had that figure as being.
And was any
incurred.
Of that broken down?
It was not broken down in any way. None. I mean, there was no breakdown by doctor. There was no breakdown by date. There was no breakdown by what procedure was done. And in that respect, that case is very similar to the case that this court decided in 2005, which is Mitchell versus Halder, which is right on point. And that was a case where the verdict was less than the medical bills. And it was the same thing in that case as in the present case. There was no itemization of the bills. There was no breakdown. There was questions of causation, as there were here. And in that case, the court said, how could the jury apportion these bills? But you also said that the plaintiff cannot now complain that the jury's verdict was based upon improper speculation and conjecture, because that's the way the plaintiff put his case in.
Well, Mr. Kessinger, turning to the record in this case, is it fair to say that conceivably the jury could have concluded that all of the medical bills were attributable to the accident, but awarded a low amount for pain and suffering because they concluded that she didn't suffer very much or have much pain?
They could have.
What's that?
I think they could have.
Okay.
The jury could have done
Or they could have awarded what even the plaintiff's counsel would concede would be a proper amount for pain and suffering in some unknown amount, at least unknown to us, and awarded less than the total number of amount of the medical bills, but we can't know that.
We don't know. We don't know what the jury did. From my point of view, I think the jury concluded that the neck injury or the neck surgery was not related to the accident, and for some reason said, in that case, some of these bills are not related.
Yeah, but how would you know?
I mean, I don't.
How can we tell that objectively from this record?
We can't, Your Honor. There's no way of knowing. The only way is by looking at the evidence. And that's what I tried to do on cross-examination and point out that this was a degenerative disc case. And that's the only way you can do it. I've never yet been able to get an expert to change his opinion, but you can always go after the underlying facts of the expert. And when we did that, I think it became clear that this lady had degenerative disc disease, and that was the cause of the surgery. I can go through all the evidence that supports that. The x-rays after the accident showed there was a narrowing of the disc space, and the doctor said that showed degeneration. There were osteophytes that were found after the accident.
Mr. Healy, I believe, stated that there was no motion made to direct a verdict on the issue of causation. Is that correct? And I gather, but tell me if I'm wrong, that there was no special interrogatory regarding causation or the amount of medical bills that resulted from the accident.
That is correct. There was the jury instruction basically dealt with, you find either of the parties liable, and then if you do, it was simply in what amount do you award the plaintiff. There was no breakdown as to medical bills. There was no breakdown as to which injury they were awarding. So it was a general verdict of $38,000. But you're correct. We have no idea how they came up with that verdict. We only know that we challenged the fact that the doctor said the herniated disc was related to the accident. And we thought we challenged it effectively because I thought on cross-examination it was fairly clear that Dr. Sugarman's opinion really didn't hold any water after he was done. And remember, there was another doctor in this case, Dr. Zarifos, who diagnosed a cervical sprain strain following the accident. So he treated her for a sprain strain. He never treated her for a herniated disc. And those are facts. Those are the facts that the jury decided, I think. And if they made a factual determination that this was not related, I don't know how this court can overturn that. I mean, that's what the Constitution of the State of Delaware says, that the findings of the jury are conclusive if supported by evidence, and we think the evidence was clear in this case. I also want to point out that in that same decision, the Mitchell versus Holder case, this court said that, and I didn't pick this up on my original briefing, but it's right in here, and I like it, that the only way you can go after the opinion of an expert is through cross-examination. And that's, you have to go after him and test his basis of his opinion. And that's what we did. So we were able to show in this case that Dr. Sugarman's opinion was not based on the facts of the case. And I think the jury agreed with that.
What's your response to Mr. Healy's contention in his reply brief that Mitchell v. Haldar is distinguishable because, in stark contrast, all the medical bills here relate solely to the treatment of complaints experienced by the plaintiff following a significant motor vehicle accident? That's at page 6 of his reply brief.
If you read Mitchell, there are two parts to that case. One was dealt with the agreed-upon medical bills, and that's what we're talking about here. No, there were causation issues. There's no question but that the bills were incurred. Nobody questioned that. We agreed to that. But whether those bills related to the surgery because of the accident or whether they related to the surgery because of the pre-existing degenerative disc disease was for the jury determination. I don't think there's any distinction. I think that both cases are right on point. I'm really not sure I understood what Mr. Healy was talking about there. He cited the Superior Court decision and not the Supreme Court decision. I cited the decision of this court, but it was the same issue. The medical bills were not broken down, and there were issues of causation. And that's what if there's issues of causation, the jury can determine causation. And if they decided that, as they did, I think in this case, that the herniated disc was not related to the accident, they would have discounted the bill somehow. And I think the verdict is sound. At least that's what the trial court found. The trial court found that the evidence was there of degenerative disc disease and said that's logical for the jury to have concluded that. And I don't see how this court can say, well, she was wrong because the evidence was there. Any other questions, I will
yield. Thank you.
Go, counsel. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Cynthia Beam on behalf of Defendant Cole Van Gilder. I'm left with just the issue of the impeachment of the plaintiff by use of the pleadings at trial. And her credibility was not being attacked because there was alternative pleading used by plaintiff's counsel. The credibility issue surrounds the fact that the plaintiff did not, her testimony was not in compliance with the allegations of negligence against Mr. Van Gilder. She adamantly testified throughout the course of discovery and also through the trial that Mr. Van Gilder had a green turn arrow, that she looked up the road and didn't see any traffic coming in the opposite direction when they started into the intersection, and that the next thing she knows, they're getting struck.
Well, your point, I gather, is that, number one, in the complaint, she alleged that the driver of her car was negligent and specified the basis for it. At trial, she disavowed at least the facts, if not the entire claim, and yet at the same time refused to voluntarily dismiss that claim. That is, still insisted that the claim go before the jury. And so I gather your conclusion is that certainly could have led a reasonable jury to doubt her credibility on that generally, and if that's the case, it could have led the jury also to doubt her credibility or discount her credibility on the issue of how much pain and suffering she underwent.
That's exactly my argument, Your Honor. And not only the facts of how the accident happened were controverted by her own testimony versus the pleadings. There was, you know, closing argument by plaintiff's counsel that, you know, his client might have gotten it wrong. So that leaves the jury, I submit, confounded at that point. They're not quite sure what they're supposed to do with a plaintiff who's saying that one of the parties that she's alleging was negligent, in fact, was not negligent.
Well, let me see if I understand your position with regard to the law on using a pleading for impeachment. And as I understand it, you can't use a pleading for impeachment if it's an allegation that's subsequently abandoned because it wasn't supported by discovery. Do you agree?
Yes.
And in this case, you're contending the impeachment was proper because the allegation in the complaint, for example, was Van Gilder wasn't driving appropriately under the conditions at the time. That was the theory that she wanted recovery on. And yet, on the witness stand, her testimony was he was driving appropriately for the conditions.
Correct. The allegations were never abandoned by the plaintiff during the course of the trial. The allegations were argued by plaintiff's counsel in direct contradiction to what her own sworn testimony was.
And the fact that the jury came back and divided liability equally between the defendants and therefore has to be attributable to what the other witnesses said, because it certainly couldn't have been based on her testimony.
That would be one way of trying to decipher what this jury's decision meant, yes.
Well, at a minimum, it shows that the jury did not believe the plaintiff when she described your client's driving as being okay.
That's the position that I take, yes. And therefore, if they don't believe her on that particular issue, then you know, it calls into doubt whether they believed her testimony in regards to the causation of the neck surgery and how much pain she was in. There were inconsistencies regarding her activities of daily living. She would testify on direct things like she couldn't even bathe herself, and her elderly mother had to help her.
So in your view, your client was her friend, and she was suing her friend, knowing her friend had insurance, but that she wasn't comfortable saying her friend did anything wrong. And yet she wanted to recover. And so in your view, by trying to not cast aspersion on her friend's conduct, notwithstanding the evidence that might have suggested negligence by your client, she undermined her credibility with regard to the other issues that she testified about.
I think that is a reasonable inference of what the jury's view of the evidence was, yes.
Another way to put it, perhaps, would be that in this kind of case, you can't have it both ways, and therefore, by trying to have it both ways, the jury, she lost credibility with the jury.
That wouldn't be it in a nutshell, yes. That's really all that I was going
Thank
to
you.
Present. Thank you.
We shouldn't forget that there was another defendant in this case, Mr. Swing, Mr. Castorino's client, who testified in plaintiff's case in chief. All the witnesses, all the drivers were called in plaintiff's case in chief. And he testified clearly that he had a solid green light, which would mean there's no way that the other side could have a green arrow if you believed his testimony.
What point are you trying to make?
The point I'm trying to make, Your Honor, is that the jury knew in the very beginning that what the allegations were. They knew in the beginning, before they even heard testimony, that Ms. Glover was going to testify consistent. Her recollection is consistent with the recollection of her driver.
And what follows from that? Why is that legally relevant to this case?
Your Honor, it's just that the in terms of a credibility issue, it's not a credibility issue where she had one view of the case. She testified in one way at one point and then testified differently at another time.
Well, all right, yeah, that, even if you're right, what follows from that legally? How does that affect at all the legal issues on this appeal?
I don't believe it causes a credibility issue with respect to the medical. It should be able to cause a credibility issue with respect to the medical issues. There's objective evidence of the medical injuries. Whether or not she got it right, whether or not her recollection was correct as far as what color the light was, shouldn't permit a jury to decide whether or not a neck surgery was related to the accident.
Did you argue that to the trial court? Did you ask for a jury instruction?
Your Honor, at that point it wasn't necessary. The jury instructions were fine. It's just when
Well, you're saying the jury shouldn't have been allowed to conclude that is to doubt her credibility on the medical testimony as a consequence of the interchange that took place when she was cross-examined about the complaint. If that's correct, then shouldn't the jury have been so instructed, and did you ask for an instruction?
I did not, Your Honor. We could have moved for a directed verdict, but the failure to do so does not preclude us from making the new trial motion that we're making. You know, it was either right or wrong then, it's either right or wrong after the verdict, and you have to look at the weight of the evidence, the great weight of the evidence, and is there any evidence in there that's consistent with the standard that her injury was a result of degenerative disease and that the neck surgery was a result of degenerative disease? It's not in the record. Never did Dr. Sugarman testify within a reasonable degree of medical probability that degenerative disease was the cause. He testified exactly the opposite. So where does the jury find that the neck surgery is not related? I don't think there's any evidence in the instructions or in the case that is
so. Mr. Healy, help me understand this. It strikes me as unusual that if a plaintiff says that a particular defendant is not at fault, that the case still goes forward with that claim. I presume at some point she told you, I want to sue both parties, right?
Your Honor, it's not that she doesn't determine fault. That's for a jury to determine. She has to testify truthfully with what her observations were. Her observations and that of her driver may be incorrect. So it happens all the time. It doesn't mean that they're liars. They may have thought they had a green arrow, but instead they had a solid green light because there's somebody on the other side, Mr. Schwing, who testifies exactly the opposite. One of them has to be incorrect.
Okay, so she never told you, don't sue Van Gilder.
Your Honor, without breaching attorney-client, I think she was going by advice of counsel that in order for, since we don't know if they're correct about what color the light is, and somebody else thinks it's just the opposite, that in order to, if you don't bring Mr. Van Gilder in and the jury decides that we are incorrect, she has no remedy.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you all for your arguments. The court will take this matter under advisement. We'll also take a brief recess.